President Trump has pardoned and commuted sentences of several powerful white-collar criminals, including the former governor of Illinois, Rod Blagojevich. One prisoner notably not on the list of those granted clemency yesterday was former Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick. He's currently serving a 28-year sentence for racketeering and fraud. But Kilpatrick still has powerful people in his corner, lobbying the president to put an end to Kilpatrick's lengthy stay in federal prison. Let's listen. Here's CompuWare founder Peter Karmanos speaking with journalist Charlie LaDuff on his No BS NewsHour podcast.
You think Trump is actually considering?
Yes.
Pardoning Kwame?
Yes.
Because you are a billionaire and you got a line into the White House. So you're saying this from personal knowledge that the president is considering it?
Sure.
We've talked about this before. Back in 2013, Michigan Radio asked the person then serving as federal prosecutor who tried Kilpatrick to talk about that possibility. Here is Barbara McQuaid, then federal prosecutor for the Eastern District, when the guilty verdict came down against Kilpatrick.
The former mayor was not focused on running the city. He was focused on using the mayor's office as a money-making machine for himself and his family and friends. He was grabbing money from the citizens.
These days, Barbara McQuaid is a professor at the University of Michigan. She will not comment on the case. She says federal cases should be discussed by prosecutors currently overseeing those offices. But we still had plenty to ask her about regarding clemency and how it's used by any sitting president. Barb McQuaid, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks, April. Glad to be with you.
It's common for anyone in the legal profession to get to the end of the case and there is a resolution with the realization that there may be appeals processes going forward. What are the circumstances in which commutation is considered and is sometimes considered appropriate?
There is an Office of Pardon Attorney at the Department of Justice, and that pardon attorney looks at applications that are submitted by people for either pardons or commutation of sentence, which means a shortening of sentence. Together, those two things are referred to as clemency. So when I was in the U.S. Attorney's Office, President Obama had a program under what he called Smart on Crime, where he frequently used that to address cases involving people who were sentenced to lengthy sentences in drug cases that would be charged differently today. So if someone got a sentence of, say, 40 years or life under a sentencing policy that would be different if they were charged today. Typically, they were seeking clemency in those cases. But the process is typically someone has expressed remorse, has admitted what they have done, has served a substantial portion of their sentence. And in those instances, the president may review those petitions and decide whether they think it's appropriate to either shorten the sentence through commutation or pardon the person altogether as a show of mercy for the remorse that that person has shown. And then the president has the power to do that under the Constitution.
So it's important to point out that this is something that has to be asked for and not just asked for, but that there has to be a case made.
Well, typically that is the case. I don't know that it's a requirement, but there is a process through the Department of Justice because under the Constitution, it just gives the president the power to grant pardons.
This week, President Trump went on something of a clemency blitz, commuting the prison sentence of the former governor of Illinois, Rod Blagojevich, and pardoning a long list of well-known people, including the former commissioner of the NYPD, Bernard Carrick, who was sentenced on tax evasion and fraud charges, and the financier, Michael Milken. He did not comment on every single case, but we know at least in the case of Rod Blagojevich, because he tweeted it, he said he felt that the sentence was too long. How does that hang over prosecutors and judges' thinking in the sentencing phase of a trial?
Well, I can just tell you my view on that, which is that don't forget that this sentence was fashioned by a judge who sat through the entire trial, heard arguments by lawyers for the prosecution and the defense, and fashioned what under the law is supposed to be a sentence that is sufficient but no greater than necessary to achieve the purposes of sentencing, which include deterrence and respect for the rule of law. And so when a president comes in after the fact and says, I think it's just too long, I think there's a sense that he's simply substituting his judgment for the one that was formed during the case. But of course, it's his prerogative to do that. As we said, during the Obama administration, President Obama thought some of the sentences were just too long in some of these drug cases. And so he has the prerogative to do that. I think that where I find maybe something objectionable to what the president is doing here, though, is some of his other comments where he said that all he did was make one phone call, and he's already served 7 years in prison because of that, part of a 14-year sentence. It sounds awfully familiar to the defense that President Trump himself has run about only one phone call that was a perfect phone call in what was actually a larger corruption scheme. And the same is true with regard to Rod Blagojevich. There were 18 counts that he was convicted of corruption relating to his office, that he frequently used his office as a profit center. He would extort people into making campaign contributions, a children's hospital, some developers of real estate, as well as attempting to sell President Barack Obama's Senate seat when he became the president and that seat became vacant. So it was an entire course of conduct that I think is not accurately described as a single phone call.
Is there anything baked into the judicial process that helps to bolster the work that has been done is there anything preventing someone in executive office from somehow lessening the impact of all the work that has been done by just commuting a sentence?
Well, I think there's always still the deterrent effect of potential prosecution and prosecution. I don't think anybody would want to go through the process of being convicted in hopes that some future president will pardon them or grant clemency. But I do think it sends a harmful message because if you look at not only the Blagojevich pardon, but also some of the others here, Bernard Kerik, who was at one time Rudy Giuliani's driver, who ascended to this job, high-level job in the police commission, and Michael Milken, all of these charges involve some sort of fraud or corruption or obstruction of justice. And I think it sends a message that these are not serious crimes, that these are not – they're different from crimes like violent crimes. And we shouldn't take them so seriously and that these long sentences are excessive in these cases. And I would argue just the opposite, that these are cases that are based on greed. These are not people who found themselves without hope or alternative in society, but were wealthy and powerful and chose to exercise that power to just get even richer and even more powerful by gathering what they could when they could. And so I think those are the kinds of crimes that undermine public confidence in our government and for that reason are the most important to punish.
Well, it sometimes is difficult for people to separate what should happen with what does happen, especially in the sort of winner-take-all climate that seems to be today's politics. Is there a reason for people to think that political considerations are not at the end of the day what determines sentences like these?
So that's the kind of question that I think President Trump's conduct raises, and I think one that is so harmful to our respect for the rule of law. We are a system of laws and not of men. We should make sure that people are dealt with fairly and punished appropriately. And when people see that if you are wealthy or powerful or well-connected, you get an opportunity to do things that the rest of us don't, I think that causes erosion in our system of government and in public trust of the criminal justice system.
I know that you cannot talk about the case of Kwame Kilpatrick, but really we don't even have to go there. We could talk about sentencing discrepancies at any other level of the justice system. As people are looking at sentences, commutations, and other forms of clemency, and see white-collar defendants getting consideration at a higher rate than African-American defendants, what are they left to think?
You're absolutely right about that. And I think that there is a tendency in this country, in our courts, to punish white-collar defendants more leniently than other defendants on this theory that their crimes are somehow less serious or that because of good deeds they have done, they are less deserving of punishment. But I think that is a really dangerous way to look at the rule of law. You would hear things like, my client has been punished enough by the shame that he has endured from his conviction, and so a sentence of probation is more appropriate for him. Why, he can't even walk into his country club and look anyone in the eye after the publicity that this case has garnered for him. What does that say? It says that the privileged get these breaks that other people who don't have these well-connected reputations don't get. And I think that's just the 100% wrong way to look at these things. People should be judged on the basis of their conduct, of what they did wrong, and held accountable, because otherwise it erodes respect for the rule of law and trust in government.
If you cannot answer, we certainly understand, but did you ever imagine that Kwame Kilpatrick's name would be part of the political landscape and discussion in 2020?
I can't answer anything relating to him whatsoever, but all I can say is that I think that we need to look at crimes that are based on greed and using the abuse of power to obtain things that someone's not entitled to as very serious crimes. And I worry that President Trump is kind of grooming the public. He is trying to desensitize us and inure us to the idea that these are serious crimes so that he can use this power of pardon or perhaps even his own misconduct and be able to elicit from the public just a shrug when instead it should elicit outrage.
Barb McQuaid, thank you very much for talking with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, April.